I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Hello and welcome to part two of this week's Clash of the Titles.
Shocktober!
The podcast that for the month of October pits two horror movies with lots in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. That's right, it is our Halloween countdown that is...
Shocktober!
We spent Monday's episode having novelty Halloween masks forced on us by an aggressive marketing campaign. And today, the consumer in all of us is falling prey to another brilliant bit of advertising as we simply can't get enough of 1985's The Stuff.
The Stuff is here now. Great new taste sensation. Light and free now. But you elevation. Enough is never enough. Enough is never enough of The Stuff.
The stuff, the taste that makes you hungry for more.
The stuff,
taste that delivers.
We interrupt this presentation with the following urgent message.
Tonight, America is in grave danger.
So which film in this week's cautionary commercial quarrel will be victorious? We'll have a winner at the end of the show, so let's get it on. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
The Kraken.
Hello, Clash Butters. Nobody's mouth can open that wide. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris.
And welcome to part two of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch versus The Stuff. As you well know, at the end of this show, we'll have the verdict where we will declare which is definitively the better film. Before we get into this episode, though, it's time once again for a dip into the digital mailbag and a review from one of you to make us feel better about us. Read by Chris Tilly, a.k.a. Chris Thrilly.
I couldn't find a good new one, so I've gone back and found our very first ever review.
Aww.
Do you want to hear what was said about us 4 years ago?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A great new pod made by its presenters. They bounce off one another well, entertain and really know their stuff. Comes recommended. 5 stars. That's from ARH106.
Wow. Do you think we were more enthusiastic?
I'm not joking. I was talking to someone today who said they'd listened to one of the very early episodes. This happened today. And I was like, oh, that's nice. Oh, was it weird? No, it was really good. Chris sounded really happy. And I was like, what? And they said, yeah, over the years, you've just lost, like, you're still you, but you sound so... like
you
chippy
too.
And yeah, that's
it's
what that's
too.
What they said.
You've just enraged me.
And I was like, oh, we've broken him, we've wrecked him. And they were like, if you listen to the pitch of your voice, the
I was such a happy-go-lucky guy.
Yeah, and I don't remember you like that. But
so much joy in my heart.
Wow.
And now he's just all beaten and worn.
Is that our legacy? We wrecked him.
We wrecked Chris.
Well, hopefully you'll hear happy me today, because the fact that I've got this over the line and we're talking about The Stuff makes me happy.
Of course.
Right then. Let's not dwell on the past. Let's not look back. Let's look forward. What the future holds and working on making Chris happy again? On Monday, I was talking about how TV will rot your brain, literally, which means today junk food will make you feel hollow inside. Chris, take us on a journey, happily.
The stuff is what happens when you eat creamy white material oozing out of a hole.
Jesus Christ.
We're there already.
That's it.
Oh, please, yeah, but that should just be it.
But what is it? The stuff is tasty, but it also controls your mind in high doses. It's sentient, I think, and can impersonate the inside of a pillow. Well, it also makes dogs really clever. But the reason the stuff is really dangerous is because it poses a threat to the ice cream industry. So a bunch of ice cream suits hire an irresistible industrial saboteur who teams up with a horny marketing executive, an angry chocolate chip magnate, and a racist colonel to show the stuff that we've all had enough.
Lovely.
Yep.
So when did you first...
I think you covered all my changes in that synopsis.
So when did you first see the stuff this week?
Thursday, Friday, just trying to get it done. You have spoken very highly of it.
Not highly, just a lot about it.
A masterpiece, I think, the words.
So we have to do this.
I'll tell you my story. So I would go to Shoals Video Store down my local high street and I saw the video cover, the luminous green stuff coming out of the mouth, and it terrified me. It was one of those video covers that got in my brain and I was frightened. Then I was a bit older, I saw the trailer for it. It looked like a really, really frightening film, one that I didn't want to see because I was scared of horror films. And then when I was about 15, I went to Beano's in Croydon and bought a secondhand VHS of this for £5.99 with that same cover. I've still got the VHS with that green cover and watched it, and it's like, oh no, this is fucking ridiculous. What was I frightened of? Although I guess some of the imagery could be a little bit frightening if you're a child. The way people's mouths open is a bit terrifying.
Yeah. Chocolate Chip Charlie's death is pretty grotesque.
It's pretty grotesque.
Mm. And the stuff is not green. So were you disappointed? Unless I've watched a different film.
No, you're absolutely right. The stuff is not green. No. And yet a lot of the marketing campaign was green.
Great.
But I found it to be a fascinating film. It got me into the movies of Larry Cohen, who Alex and I talk about. Alex is a big fan of Cue the Winged Serpent. Mm. There's a film called It's Alive he did that we should do. There's a film called God Told Me To. I like his style, especially when he had a hit with Phone Booth about a man on a phone for 90 minutes and followed up with Cellular about a man on a phone for 90 minutes.
I've seen both of those.
I see what you've done. I mean, we could do it. It wouldn't be a bad week. Yeah. And I've wanted to do it here. This has been like society for me, where it's like, oh no, is this going to be a horrible week for everyone? Is everyone going to hate me if we do this film? But when I realised it would go with Halloween 3 that I really wanted to do, not realising how well it would go, I got super excited. So that's why I put you all through this. So this came to Larry Cohen while he was having a shower.
I get my best ideas in the shower.
Great.
As all his ideas do, apparently. Or did. R.I.P. He was thinking about products being recalled. He was thinking about McDonald's milkshakes and what's in them.
Well, do you know what? I've not had one for years, and I had one very recently.
Delicious.
And they are not nice. It was really warm. Oh. Like, and I'm not good with like warm, like milk, like ice cream. It's complicated. So I was like, yum, yum, yum. And I was like, it was like blood warm. Blah.
Blood warm.
You could have said like coffee warm or something.
Apologies to our potential sponsor, McDonald's.
I like your burgers.
Yeah.
But no.
They can be blood warm. They're meant to be blood warm.
They're meant to be warmer than your blood, I think.
I've always thought this film was kind of about fast food. Turns out it isn't. But, I mean, can we just quickly talk about the crap we ate in the 80s? This was made in 1975. I'm sure this was on his mind, that we would watch and eat cartoons, basically, wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, God, some of the breakfast cereals. That was the one that I always think back and go, I was shoveling like Nesquik cereal down my throat, like chocolate.
And I'd pour sugar on top of it. But kids are
apologies
much more...
to Nesquik, potential sponsor.
Yep.
But kids are much more healthy these days, aren't they?
We're more aware of... I mean, I don't know who's eating what, but we're more aware of what's in the stuff, I think. So, sorry, the food. And maybe controls are tighter, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing.
I always think of Jamie Oliver saying he would rather... I think of this all the time. I don't eat breakfast cereal. But he thinks that the aisle in the supermarket shouldn't say breakfast cereal. In order to get your head around what it actually is, it should say desserts. because there's so much sugar in it that it doesn't really qualify as a breakfast food.
And of all the foods out there, it's the one that is specifically targeted at kids. Look at this cartoon leprechaun. Look at this cartoon rabbit. Look at this. Look, look at monkey. You love monkeys. Eat this cereal.
I'll tell you how bad it got in the 80s. Because of some FDA regulations that came in, ketchup was declared a vegetable.
Right.
By the government to bypass nutrition regulations at schools.
Wow.
That's how bad it got in the 80s.
Is it not? I mean, it's majority tomatoes?
It's not majority tomatoes, no. Right, but okay. They're in there somewhere.
That's fine. It's
maybe.
One of your five a day, kids.
What I remember most, was it the 80s or very early 90s, was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pizza. But it was the chocolate one with marshmallows on. And that'd be like, that's dinner. Well, tea, because Northern. But we would have that for our tea.
A chocolate pizza with marshmallows
on. Yeah, it was brilliant.
What? This was an actual
thing. That's just a chocolate cookie.
Yeah, yeah, but you baked it. It was delicious. And do you remember those mousses? Arctic, do you remember the cheapest mousses ever? They were 10 for a pound from...
Oh my God, yeah. They were well nice.
All right, we're turning into a Peter Kay routine.
That's what we have to remember, though. All of this stuff...
It was delicious.
It tasted amazing. Yeah, it just made you live shorter.
But were we eating paint? Like, it was just... We were eating colours rather than food, nutrition.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I watched this film and thought, oh, he's making a comment on food. Turns out, Larry Cohen, this movie is about cigarettes.
Okay.
So he grew up around cigarettes, watching actors promote cigarettes on the TV, watching people try and hook children on cigarettes, watching during World War II soldiers being given cigarettes for free and coming back addicted to them. And he wanted to make a film about that, but he said cigarettes aren't much fun.
And they will come for you. That lobby is powerful.
But hitmen
too.
But so he said, what could be more benevolent than ice cream? So he made it about... essentially,
so is it
ice cream
or is it yogurt? Because
we don't
keep
know.
It in the fridge.
It's something that bubbles out of a hole in the ground. I don't know that it's
anything.
I think it might be beyond definition.
I did feel like I needed to know what it tastes like.
So I spent a large portion of the start of this movie going, really, really want some stuff. I think it tastes like melted marshmallows.
I was going to say the inside of a marshmallow. We agree.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Then
yeah,
that's what we're talking about. But obviously, it's about consumerism. He said it's about the poison of society and people who make money just selling for the sake of selling. And he said before he did a documentary about this before he passed away, and he said now he thinks you could apply this to medication.
Ooh.
About the drugs the FDA approved that should never be approved. Where you've got that long list at the end of adverts in America of the side effects.
Yeah. How fast can someone's voice be speeded up and still be legally legible to an audience? Hey, Ken goes,
Did I hear death?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I think there's a line in it in the movie where Michael Moriarty's character pointedly says, "I don't drink," and so I think. I think as well as cigarettes, he's talking about the alcohol industry and how glamorous alcohol is meant to be, which I think is why his character is impervious to wanting to try the stuff, because he's not susceptible to being told something is cool.
Yeah, something is great. He's not going to follow the crowd.
Yeah.
I think at the end they say it's aliens in her final speech, but he's also talked about it, that we've been doing tremendous amounts of damage to our planet. Is this the Earth trying to fight back? By splurging forth the stuff.
I do remember when this job I had years ago, I was reading like Marketing Week for research, and there was a big sea change coming because it became illegal or fineable or something to suggest in your adverts that alcohol made you, and there was a list of things, popular, more friendly, more lugubrious, a warmer person, a more successful person. So all the booze companies were like, fuck, that's all we do. Like, what do we do? So you could have friends raising a glass together, but you couldn't make the connection that if you drink this, you'll get those friends, which you forget that's kind of where we were. So when you see booze adverts now, they've had to jump through all those hoops to go, we really want you to drink this stuff and we want you to get drunk because we want you to think you're very funny and popular and attractive, but we cannot show you being attractive. So fascinating.
I would say about midnight on Saturday night, I was very funny and attractive.
100%. My God. Like, yes.
As we all were.
And I thought a Jägermeister and Red Bull were a wonderful combination
and
belonged together.
Who put these things together?
Magic juice.
So Larry Cohen supervises every aspect of his films. If you don't like anything in one of his films, you can entirely blame him. He's a bit of a titan. He runs and guns. A lot of it's shot guerrilla style, just grabbing shots in bars and restaurants and what have you. And so he makes it on quite a low budget, but he doesn't necessarily let the producers know what's going on or let them see anything. So financiers were expecting a traditional horror movie when Larry delivered the finished movie to them. As he said, I didn't show it to anyone until it was too late to change it.
And it's good if you can get away with it.
Yeah, of course.
To be fair, he spent an entire career pretty much getting away with it. But he believed, well, they weren't happy with it, so they buried it, essentially. And he had all these ideas about how to market it. He wanted to put fake trailers in cinemas. He wanted to have coupons in magazines for the stuff. He wanted to have celebrities endorsing it. He really wanted to build up the interest in this product.
Yeah, but it would have also been great because he clearly spent a lot of time designing the cart and designing the theme tune.
He wanted to sell the stuff ice cream in concession stands outside the cinema.
I love that.
That would have been great because it would have created... I really wish he'd been able to do
well,
that.
And he would have today because those fake trailers would have gone online and gone viral potentially, especially if he got some celebrities in them. So I think he was ahead of the curve in terms of how you would market a film like this. But obviously at the time, they didn't know what the hell to do with
it. And also, if you want money for that, you have to show us the movie.
That's a good point. Can I have five? Well, no, I haven't even seen it.
Yeah. It's exactly what you wanted. Yeah. What was it you wanted? Pure horror.
That's what it is.
Yeah. But it has built up a cult following online. It became a hit on video. And that's why we're talking about it today.
Do you want to know whose favourite movie this is?
Colin Farrell's.
Yes. Yeah?
Who?
This is one of the Harry Potter cast's favourite ever movie.
Alan Rickman.
Nope.
Tom Felton.
Nope.
Grint.
Yes.
Grint.
Rupert Grint. This is Rupert Grint.
Classic Grint.
Favourite movie. Isn't that amazing? Why is it when I heard that, I was like, bloody love Grint.
Mate. Yeah.
Bloody love
well
that.
Well played, Grint.
We should have got him on as a guest.
I only found out about with 20 minutes to go until the record.
You know people in high places.
Yeah, I should. I'm going to shout it at him next time he walks past me.
In hanging.
Get stuffed! Didn't say it, but yes.
In your gated compound.
Yeah, it's a lot like the town from Halloween 3.
Right, let's talk about this movie. So we start with snow, a snowstorm. Mm. They didn't have equipment to shoot in snow, and that snowstorm came out of nowhere. Larry Cohen was told by his team that his equipment would explode if they shot in the snow. He said, I don't care. They got the shots and some of the equipment did break, which caused him real issues financially. It looks good, but I do think it makes us think that the stuff might be in the snow, which isn't the point in the film.
No.
Wait, equipment in snow explodes?
That's what Larry Cohen says. Now, he tells a tall tale.
Yeah,
so
I'll say it's a bit cold, so things might catch fire to keep warm.
So some workmen find this stuff bubbling up. It tastes real good. Another bloke joins him. He likes it too.
It's very much the start of Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, when Sméagol finds the ring and his friend's like, oh, let me see that. And he's like, no, it's mine. Like initially, the first guy's like, hey, what are you doing over there? He's like, nothing, my stuff.
The stuff will do strange precious things to a person.
Yeah. And then the other guy sucks his finger.
Yeah.
They just seem like really rugged men on a really rugged sort of like workman site.
But it's that delicious. Mm.
So they use different things for the stuff for the actors to use. So I've got a list here. Custard, ice cream, yogurt, whipped cream, shaving cream. Mm. I mean, couldn't they have just found whipped cream that looked like shaving cream for that poor little boy?
No, but he wants the jeopardy. He wants the actors on edge. It's like, what am I going to be putting in my
mouth? That's a fun trick, isn't it?
And when they had the huge mass of stuff, that was fire department foam, which is made up of ground up fish bones and guts, apparently.
Yikes!
So you didn't want to be anywhere near that set.
You want the marshmallow day.
You never want to be near a burning building just after they put it out. It's like, whoo!
So they reckon they can sell it to people, and then it sort of jumps around a bit. We meet kid Jason, who wakes up because he's too hot. He heads downstairs, he finds the stuff moving around his fridge. His dad finds him, doesn't believe him. Dad, is that's weirdly nasty. Angry.
Yeah.
Because his son's cut. But I was thinking maybe it's the stuff's in his head is making him turn.
I hope that's it.
It must be.
He's like, never do this to me again. And he's like, what, just get a bit to eat?
Yeah,
like,
I was a bit hungry in the night.
I think he reported back to his wife later. He goes, he was at the fridge in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So to be fair, it is the stuff doing it to him then.
But he whacks him, doesn't he? Doesn't he hit him?
Yeah, he hits him.
Yeah, that's shocking.
I was like, God, those brothers are well cast. They look a lot like brothers.
They're brothers.
They're brothers, yeah.
They are.
I also couldn't believe it. I was like, they're so sick. Oh,
those eyes are mad that they've got. Quite green eyes, aren't they?
Yeah.
In the dark, yeah. We've got an advert. There's a woman likes the stuff better than ice cream.
Is she somebody?
No.
Just models. It's models enjoying the stuff.
I'm a big girl and I like the stuff. That's what she says.
Well, it's because enough is never enough.
Enough is never enough.
Well, interestingly, what she called the actress, Andrea Markovici, who plays Nicole, she said she took the role because she'd had bad experiences with dangerous dieting and she felt like the film was trying to make comment on that.
That's the whole 80s, isn't it? Like, you know, think about the death of margarine, for instance. Like when I
Who was she?
She was at the wedding on Saturday.
She was a Madonna cover artist. She was just known as Margarine.
But that's like, there was diet, I mean, not so much in this country, but you heard like diet pills and whatever.
I totally didn't realise margarine had done one.
Still get it, but it's dated. People are like, this shit is dangerous. Just and then there's been like a resurgence of like good fat. So it's like, we should just eat butter. Like, just have butter. Mm. Don't have a butter substitute unless it's olive oil. You know, all this conflicting science, but it's really interesting. Because anybody's mum, broad strokes, in the 80s was like, we're going to fry everything in margarine because I'm on a diet. Like, it was just like, I'm going to put your Rosemary Conley on and fret about your weight for 10 years.
Rosemary Conley. Oh, that takes me back.
There you go.
Put Thin Lizzy on.
Yeah.
Thin's in her name? What?
You don't say that these days.
No.
Someone thin.
No. So we cut from that to some suits having a business meeting on a boat. These are the they don't really say it, but we learn that these are the ice cream companies unhappy.
the ice cream cartel. Yeah.
The ice cream cartel are upset that the makers of the stuff are building an empire. They're going national, and these other owners want to know how to make it. They're trying to analyse the ingredients, so they hire an industrial spy.
Michael Moriarty, what a legend this man is.
I knew you liked him from Cue the Winged Serpent.
Can I just say something about him? He's a good actor.
Right.
Okay. But he's doing something here that might not be good acting. We can discuss it. He's playing Mo Rutherford, industrial espionage.
Why do they call him Mo?
Because
whenever someone gives him money, he always wants Mo.
I guess it's because
I love
he doesn't
his voice, his
no,
sing song voice.
At first, I was like, "This, I can't watch any more of this." And then by the end, and then it massively grew on me. I loved him by the end, but it took me a while.
Well, so obviously, him and Larry Cohen are friends. They made a lot of films together. Mo wasn't written for Michael Moriarty and was written as a straight leading man character. And then he cast Michael, and he realised he had to change everything because he said Michael's musical. And so it becomes jazz. And Michael, and you can hear it. Michael, he does sing his lines.
He does.
He doesn't speak them. And so they're just kind of, because they know each other so well, he's writing new scenes all the time because Moriarty gets bored. He wants to keep it interesting. So he's got new lines all the time. And he's just shouting at lines that he incorporates. So he said no one else could have done it. I mean, it takes a little while to get used to. I agree with you. It's large. Mm. It's broad.
Took
it's big.
Me all of 1 second. I was like, sold.
Yeah.
This man is great. I love the story. Obviously, there's the wonderful documentary King Cohen, all about Larry Cohen. And they've got Michael Moriarty and Larry Cohen. And they're both separate talking heads talking about this. And Larry Cohen, like you say, likes a tall tale. He's like, yeah, so when I cast Michael, he was like, I need a wig. For this role, because I need to look like a leading man. And Michael Moriarty, it cuts to him going, did he say that? That is not true. He was the one who told me to wear the wig.
I've said this before. King Cohen's one of the best documentaries about filmmaking.
It's
really inspiring about this guy's can-do attitude and the weird shit he made. Mo. I guess also, he says he's Mo because he doesn't want people to know his real name. If you're undercover, you can't tell people you're Daniel. So it's actually
clever.
A code. There was a bloke in my university town who was insisted on being called Tiger Woods because he was in and out of prison a lot. And so if people didn't know what his name was, they couldn't identify him for stuff.
But there was surely only one man in the town going around by the name Tiger Woods.
It's a really good point.
You wouldn't just say, oh, I'm Chris Smith. Like, you don't know
me. That's better.
Clever.
I think he was inspired by that advert where all the kids were saying, I'm Tiger Woods. But
right.
Anyway.
So there's an advert about pretending you're Tiger Woods as well.
I mean, I'm sure he's not listening. Because yeah. he was frightening.
He's had a bad start, I think.
He wasn't the brightest lad. he's been kicked out of the FBI as Mo Rutherford. He's been blackballed, but he can go undercover. He's already got the people on the boat bugged. Mm. And he gets their money and punches one out.
When you go back to the
FBI, will you give him a message from me?
Thanks.
Great.
No, you're fired. That is not what we do in the ice cream industry, Daniel.
That's how good he is. He can just do what he likes. Yeah. He makes fun of them. He says they've got sweaty palms, bugs them.
Yeah, hits them.
He's not an ice cream guy. I think he's an FBI guy. Yeah.
So we've got a wonderful scene now on the shoot of an advert, another stuff advert of women in fur coats. Mo interrupts the suit and meets the sort of producer, Nicole, this marketing executive. He offers her a job.
He's going to buy her company.
He's going to buy her company and put her in charge.
And later, he isn't, and she's like, don't worry about it. Yeah. Like, that for me is a big problem. Like, she's been promised a multi-million-dollar buyout.
So, of these two movies that we're doing this week, which relationship do you prefer? Dr. Dan and Ellie, or over here we got Mo, and I want to say her
Nicole.
Name.
Nicole. I think I prefer Mo and Nicole, I think.
So he offers to buy her agency.
Yeah.
She asks if his hotel does room service.
Mental. Absolutely mental.
It was the 80s, though.
But the thing is, he's just offered. He's buying your company.
I'd argue it's not quick enough.
It should be the other way around. I will shag you. Are you going to buy it? Oh, you are. Well, then I won't. Like, it's done. You don't need to do it. You don't need to put out. He's already interested.
But he's hot.
What?
Because of his sing-song voice.
No. But fine. But
people call
me
Mo because whenever you offer me sex, I always want Mo.
What do you want, Mo? What do you want, Mo?
We got Jason trashing tubs of the stuff in a supermarket.
Oh, I love that.
It's great.
Because he doesn't just do it a bit. He, like, fully, like, loses
it. Yeah, there's quite a lot of security who cannot control this kid. It's going to kill you all, he shouts. And I've written down, it's become quite episodic here. Episodic.
Oh, you're funny. Sorry, it's because I'm good.
Yeah, I found it quite titillating, actually.
Oh, good. Very good. The old one, too. Any more? No, there isn't.
All right, I've got a section now called Stuffed Dog. So Mo visits...
Whoa, okay. What the fuck is this all about?
Mo visits Mr. Vickers, played by Danny Aiello.
Yeah.
He's pretending to be a journalist here. He asks how long he's been on the Food and Drug Administration. He's finding about testing and approving the stuff. He explains it's not medicine. And there's a big dog called Ben in the room, who Vickers seems very scared of.
Yeah.
So it's like...
To the point that Mo says, why is your master scared of you?
Have you seen the dog?
Why is your master scared of you?
Because I'm a massive lion dog.
Yeah, I think it's actually a banned breed in the UK. I think it looks like a Dogo Argentino or Argento, which is a hunting dog from Argentina, which is a banned breed in the UK.
Okay.
So Mo stumbles on a room full of the stuff in Vickers' house. I don't know. We learn later in the film that some people are more susceptible. So is the dog eating more of the stuff than Vickers?
But why?
And that's why the dog's in control rather than Vickers.
But also he says, I'll buy more. And it's like, how much does the dog get through? Because there's a massive room full of
it. Well, it can open its mouth quite wide.
Why does the dog then kill him, though? Because they're both eating the stuff, so they're both stuffy.
Is the dog killing
him?
Is the dog killing him because he's telling information to Mo?
Super smart dog then, yeah, maybe.
Well, he does pull the cord out of the wall of the phone.
Well, he's a stuffy. He's no longer a dog. I mean, the question is, does the stuff take on the intelligence of the thing it inhabits, or does it bring its own sentience to the creature?
Well, it definitely
inhabits.
Has with the dog. The dog is smarter than a normal dog.
It seems to be.
Would Simon...
smarter than a normal dog.
If you were trying to make a phone call and Simon didn't want you to, would he know to pull the cord out of the wall?
No, he just puts his hand on the buttons. He just, like, presses...
It says, I was talking to you.
Are you really going to answer that now? Now.
I thought we were having a conversation.
We are having a conversation, Simon. I'm so sorry.
So this is our first stuff kill because Ben the dog's... I call Ben the dog because it doesn't sound like a dog, does it? Who calls a dog by human name? Ben the dog's mouth opens.
Attention seeker.
Simon!
Did you get the looks in the park you wanted?
I sort of didn't want them
in the novelty warmed off?
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, once the first person who came up and went, are you looking
for
a child?
Your son?
Yeah. I was like, ah!
So funny!
Thank you!
And then you don't realise. I didn't realise how many strangers you had to speak to when you've got a dog that attacks things.
So, oh, right. Yeah, fair enough.
It's like, yeah, he doesn't attack things.
Squirrels.
Just children. Just children.
So Ben's mouth open wide, the stuff emerges, and Ben kills Vickers. And on that happy moment?
Who knows? I mean, happy for me. I'm on Ben's side.
All right, we're taking a break anyway.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
And we're back, and it's time to meet Chocolate Chip Charlie.
Do we have to?
Did I miss a beat? Because I was like, who the fuck is this right now? Like,
he's a cookie magnate.
I didn't know that.
His hand's a secret weapon.
I mean, it's literally about the third thing that Mo says. He goes, you're the cookie magnate.
Yeah.
Chocolate Chip Charlie. And his name's Chocolate Chip Charlie.
Yeah, okay.
And he's also investigating the stuff because I guess the people from the stuff have got control of his company.
Right.
So this is someone I talked about quite recently.
Yeah,
This is Garrett Morris, who on the 48 Hours episode, when Nick Nolte was told that an African-American gentleman on the Saturday Night Live cast was a drug addict,
yeah,
and he didn't want to work with Eddie Murphy because of it, and then found out later it wasn't Eddie Murphy, it was this actor.
Oh,
yeah, yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, Garrett Morris. I was looking up what he got up to. One of his favourite pastimes was getting high in his dressing room instead of working out the blocking prior to Saturday Night Live. Morris's drug use got so bad that he began to claim that an invisible hypnotist robot was sitting on his shoulder and controlling his actions.
Really? Interesting.
An invisible hypnotist.
The reason I say that is because I used to, when we were at college, I used to talk about this, the jester of shame. So we would wake up from a night carousing and I would say, oh, I feel like, you know, there's like a little jester and I'd try and go through my day and then it would kind of like bonk me on the head with a memory and go, but do you remember that? And I'd be like, doing my work. And then I'd go, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And I used to picture it as a little court jester with a little hit, like a Punch and Judy
really
thing.
Really pleased I didn't know that at the time.
Really, I would just be looking at her shoulders, yeah, trying to freak her out.
Yeah, like it just had a stick. Yeah. Bonk.
Invisible. How are you doing? Not you, Vicky. The jester.
Anyway.
So there's some business here. There's a gas station guy who's got a load of stuff and then stuff spills out of his big mouth.
An interesting line here where he says, leave us alone. We're not bothering anybody, which is an interesting bigger story to this stuff just wants to inhabit these people and then it'll stop, or if it wants domination,
well, I guess,
or if
that's
it's a lie.
Both of these films, we didn't really talk about it too much on Monday, but both these films are very Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And I guess in those films, the idea is actually maybe society would be better if we were all pod people. But he punches a guy's head and it's empty because of the stuff intake. So if you eat enough stuff, your brain disappears.
Well, you're just hollowed out. You're just a vessel that's transporting this goop around and there's nothing left of you.
Nothing,
so when
right
it exits
you.
Your body, it leaves nothing behind. So can you explain this diner scene to me? Because I don't understand why they ask for some stuff and then they're told there isn't any stuff and then actually there is loads
of
stuff.
Yeah, it's like they're hoarding it, but I don't know why.
Right. Okay.
Like they want it for themselves.
I don't know.
Okay.
But I do wonder, because this is when Charlie sends Mo to New York to see the FBI.
Yeah.
And I think this is the last we see of Charlie until the end of the film.
It is.
So I don't understand how Charlie gets turned by the stuff, because he wouldn't eat it voluntarily. So I wonder if they sneakily get him here in this diner, because we know it's a stuff diner.
Could be.
Maybe.
Yeah, it needs clarification, I'm afraid.
there's a few moments like that in this movie.
Mo heads to New York, where the stuff agents are onto him. He meets with the distributor, who's the actor who played the captain of the ship in Under Siege.
Yes. Yes, Patrick Mc... Patrick O'Neill.
Patrick O'Neill, good shout. And he tells him to let go of it. You can't stop it. He's already gone too far, the stuff.
Mm.
But Mo thinks he can.
So this is Larry Cohen. This is what he was saying about I think he called them the Madison Avenue people, the people who just don't give a fuck about the effect of their product on society, here represented by Patrick O'Neill. There's a guy who's just like, hey, don't matter. We're just going to farm it. We're going to farm it out there. We're going to make a lot of money.
More money.
And I don't eat it myself is the key. He's like, I wouldn't touch it. Mm. No, not for me.
He says, I want more money. And Mo says, more money, more problems. I wrote that. Jason's family is all eating the stuff for dinner. There's something alive in there. He says, they're good for us, Jason. They kill the bad things inside us.
It's all good. It's all, that's yoghurt advertising.
It is. It's your cult.
Yeah.
Bye-bye to another sponsor. I mean, there's a bit moment here, is it, where the mum says we don't get tired anymore now. Mm. we're eating properly.
Yeah, that's good.
And it keeps her slim.
Yeah.
It's good because it's bad.
Yes.
So Jason chucks it down the toilet and fills it with shaving foam. Don't fill it up to the top, Jason. You're going to have to eat all that shaving foam. Also, chuck it down the toilet and come downstairs and say, yeah, I've eaten it. Lovely.
Delicious.
We go to Georgia now because we learned that they've moved all the stuff to Georgia.
Yeah,
but there's a brilliant line.
There's a brilliant line where someone goes, apparently eating the stuff leads to mass migration. <You're> like,
yep.
What? That's not why we're going to Georgia.
Yep. So the relocation has happened, and Mo and Nicole tour the stuff factory, and we get some ADR here because sometimes you've not read it in the script where someone says you've got to eat enough of it for it to take over the mind, and some are more susceptible.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, it's useful.
I was so lost.
What does it do? That feels like an interesting amount of information over a shot of a limousine.
That's not very conversational. We've got a motel, and this is when the stuff comes out of a pillow and attacks Mo.
Yeah.
It's good. Really good.
Nicole burns it off, and then a guy attacks. Does that guy think that Mo's attacking Nicole and so comes to attack
Mo?
No,
I thought he was a stuffy.
Right, but then why does the stuff attack him?
Who fucking knows?
Yeah, this is a real problem with this whole sequence, because I'm like, who's he? Why is he attacking Mo? Why is the stuff attacking
I think he's a normal man who thinks that Mo's attacking Nicole, because that's what it looks like when he opens the door.
Okay. Why is he opening the door and invite?
Because
of the noises.
Yeah, yeah. Right, it sounds like someone's been attacked by this some stuff. So the stuff pins this poor bloke to the wall.
Yeah.
And this is where they turned the set on its side to shoot that. So they said it's the Fred Astaire shot. I've written down Virtual Insanity by Jamiroquai shot. That's how we know it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or I guess Nightmare on Elm Street did it with Johnny Depp, where it all turns around the set. But anyway, it looks really cool, I think, here. This death is a great death. They find the source of the stuff in a quarry. It's being taken out of the ground and pumped straight into supermarkets.
They're not doing anything to it.
They
could do something to it. Go on, sorry.
Did anyone get real Close Encounters of the Third Kind vibe from this?
Because they're peeking behind the rocks as well. Yeah, that was it. Rocks.
You've got all these searchlights set up.
Oh, I think it looks brilliant.
You've got this combination of nature.
But do I think it looks brilliant because it makes me remind me of that.
This is better than Close Encounters.
I think this might be better than Close Encounters.
That's what I call a close encounter.
Mo goes undercover in a yellow jumpsuit. Jason gets trapped in a truck with stuff flowing towards him.
Good idea.
Yeah, Jason has an argument with the stuff. Mo hears him and drives the truck away and blows the site up because he's got bomb on him or something.
In his ankles.
Yeah.
It's sort of weird that he straps it to his ankles and takes it off less than 5 minutes later. Put him in a pocket.
Now there's a big handbrake turn as we meet the army.
Yay!
They drive to a castle where some soldiers appear, all of them reporting to Colonel Spears, played by Mr. Paul Savino.
So I like the idea. So in my head at this point, they are very much, it's like Colonel Kurtz. It's the end of Apocalypse Now. Or, for a modern reference, Christopher Eccleston in 28 Days Later, a group of soldiers who are more loyal to their commander than they are to their country anymore.
Or Joe Rogan and his listeners. And there are parallels with Joe Logan and this character, very as nice. We will get to at the end.
Appreciate that.
So, yeah, and he's sort of, he's a very paranoid. He was worried about commies putting fluoride in the water. And Mo's able to explain to him, well, this is worse. This is, they've already infiltrated us, Spears. They're here. People are eating it. So Spears agrees to help and he decides he's now with Nicole.
He does, yeah. You can reward me later.
Which is very much like...
I want to be rewarded in the right way, is his exact
picky
words.
Picky as well as...
It sounds like a Dr. Dan line.
But it's a bit Chris Eccleston and his lot in 28 Days Later, although I guess they're doing it to repopulate, but also it's not in the nicest way.
No.
Put it in a jar. At least, what you're saying?
At least buy a dinner. the army help them, or the what are they? They are the soldiers help them. They aren't the army. They shoot the place up. It's a good line here from Spears. I kind of like the sight of blood, but this is disgusting. And he claims he's never lost a war. Jason suggests Vietnam.
Love that.
Some funny stuff.
Yeah.
He said, we lost that one at home, sonny. This is all very Larry Cohen, though, having little digs at his own country. Satire all the way through it. Nicole and Jason are chased by this stuff, and it smashes through pipes and walls of the factory. I think it looks really cool here.
Yeah, this is an excellent scene.
Tiny budget, and yet he's made it look like something I've never seen before on screen. They get in a chopper. Spears has got a radio station. I've written down here because he's basically Joe Rogan. So they head there, but there's taxis waiting for them. And the taxi driver says, what is this, World War II? And Colonel Spears says, just get us to 4th and Main and no more of your liberal remarks. And he orders them to give the drivers tips and get receipts.
Get the receipt. I love that bit. It's so good.
And Nicole drafts a press release because that's an exciting way to end a movie.
Yeah. And then it's like, is there a need to rehearse this speech? Are we not up against the clock a little bit?
She refers to herself as the queen of ex-liars.
She's the villain in this movie, the movie wants me to believe, because later on when she's like, this is my fault, I'm sorry about
well
all
they do
that.
Establish at the start that she came up with the name and all the marketing, so yeah.
She didn't put the mind-bending qualities inside the product, though. She just did a nice advert.
Yeah, she was hired to promote a product that at least she didn't know came out of the earth and was taking over people's carcasses.
Yeah, she's doing her job.
Chocolate Chip Charlie's back. Spears doesn't want a black man on his broadcast. Disturbing stuff here. What's written here? I will permit this coloured man to speak. He changes his mind eventually. Spears is presented as a bad dude, isn't he? So that's sort of in keeping with his personality. And then Charlie turns on Nicole.
Good scene. Good effects work here.
Neck bulges, mouth open, stuff emerges, and a rubber hand puppet pops out. It's a bit grim. We don't know how they got Charlie. I feel like it would have been nice if the African-American character had survived. This is something that Jordan Peele's talked about a lot, that literally every 80s movie, if they introduce a black character, they're going to die. We see it here. Especially as he was a goodie. And so, to save themselves, they electrocute the stuff.
That's correct.
And survive. And so this is when she mentions we're under alien attack. I kind of wish that wasn't in there, so it was a bit more ambiguous, especially if they're going for this environmental message. And they tell the world to cook it. So Nicole does a piece to camera explaining that it withdrew and the nations collected and destroyed the stuff.
It was lucky, isn't it, that everybody just did what they were told.
We see images of piles of stuff being burned, stores being blown up. Casualties were in their thousands, but they saved millions. Mm. And that's the end, apart from this little coda where we learn that ice cream businesses and the stuff are back in business now because it's seeping up through the earth all over the place. And they've collaborated on the taste, which has 12% of the stuff in it, but the balance is with dairy. So there's not enough to take a grip of your mind.
Right.
This is what would happen.
That's clever. It also
sounds like a viable product.
It does.
I don't see a problem with that. If it tastes great and doesn't take over your mind... I mean, Patrick O'Neill is onto something. It's a shame that he has to die.
Well, they won't taste it themselves, will they? Until Mo pulls out a gun and Jason appears with the stuff and they get force-fed.
Mainly that bit where he's like, he's all grown up now, and he's like, I am, actually, so I can do this. I think that's brilliant.
And we get the key line here. Are you eating it, or is it eating you?
Yeah.
It's an important line.
Yeah. Little Jason has graduated from trashing supermarkets to murder by the end of this movie. Great arc.
Yeah.
So that's a great line, and now the stuff is being sold on the black market like cocaine, the end, and some Superman music. So that's the stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Favourite scene, Vicky?
Pillow, then fire on your face. Mm. I was surprised. He's got the stuff on his face, and she's like, I'm just going to set fire to you. Be like, are you sure this will work?
Can we double check? Can you just test it on the carpet?
Yeah, is there not another way before you set fire to my face?
So mine is almost that motel scene, because I think it's great. But as we discussed, the logic of the guy, it would just be so perfect if I understood what his purpose was and why he was in there. And it became clear, perhaps, that he is trying to protect Nicole from Mo. So it's not that. It's almost Chocolate Chip Charlie's death, just because it looks absolutely best. I think it's the best effects work in the movie. But it is the introduction of Mo. Because...
What, with the sweaty palms?
I love it. I was like, how am I going to enjoy this movie? Oh, yes, I am. Hello, Michael Moriarty.
For me, the best scene is Chocolate Chip Charlie getting stuffed. But my favourite scene is when the dog rips the cord out of the wall. It just invites so many questions. Are all animals sentient?
Because
now?
It's so precise as well. It's not like tugging, it's like nip, like just does it.
Alex, most valuable whatever.
I think you know the answer to this. It's a man named Michael Moriarty and his portrayal of Mo in the movie. Love him. I think he's brilliant. I think he makes this movie.
Vicky.
Very fun, because I went on a journey with Michael Moriarty because I thought this is unwatchable. Paul Savino is very funny, but I think I might be projecting about everything else I've seen him in. So I mean this, I'm not being arch. It's the stuff. Like, I don't know what it wants, and I don't really know what it is or does in any sort of consistent fashion, but every single time you see it, you're like, hooray, it's the stuff.
Do you like the ambiguity, or do you think you needed more?
I think there's a lot. I'm being told a lot of things. I like the idea that it's come up from the ground and nobody knows why and who, and if it's a natural whatever. The alien thing, I think you're right, it's too much information. I just like, it just looks like fun. I like it when it's like a big tidal wave of stuff and it's like, doo, doo, doo. I just think it's good.
My most valuable ever is, in case we never do him again, Larry Cohen.
Yeah,
I just think we're going to be doing Cue the Winged Serpent, so we are.
All right, again. And then can we also do God Told Me To and It's Alive? He didn't direct Phone Booth, but we may as well chuck that in.
Yeah.
Let's do all his films.
Fine.
Larry Cohen. I just think he's a special person. He's like the more fucked up John Carpenter. I feel like they were both doing sort of political genre films at the same time, but John Carpenter was doing them on a bigger budget and a bit better.
Yeah.
Change, Vicky.
I can't believe you haven't mentioned this. I would like there to be the creation of the portal to a shared universe with the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Okay.
I think it's all there. I don't know how you do it. I haven't thought beyond that, but it's the timing's perfect. 84, 85. So just do that for me, please.
Fine.
So my change is literally the opposite of your most valuable whatever. I want to know what the stuff is.
Yeah.
I want, not what it is. I can handle something coming out of the earth, but I want to know how it works. It's rules. The rules. I need to understand. Is it sentient? What effect does it have? There's so much thrown in about how much you eat, what it can do, where it stops, what it controls, what it doesn't control. I was just like, I need some rules for the stuff, and you're not giving me any. And so I sort of lost my handle on really enjoying the movie.
What rule do you want?
Well, does it take over your brain so it can propagate? Like, or does it? Is it spores? Like, how does it get more? Is there just an unlimited supply of it, and it's killing people for fun?
Do you have to keep it eating it? Does it run out? Or like, if you eat enough and then it stays in you? Like, what happens? Like, people eat,
and is it yogurt or ice cream? And do you keep it in the fridge or the freezer?
Exactly,
massive.
I think the movie gets wrong what Halloween gets right, and that's having a villain. I think those suits at the end don't mean anything to us. I think you need to give us a mastermind or someone in charge of doing the bidding of the stuff.
Right.
Because it might muddy the message somewhat, but I think it would be more satisfying than our big death at the end being Chocolate Chip Charlie.
Yes.
That just feels wrong to me.
Yeah.
So I think we do need a Cochrane, even if it's just someone who's been enslaved by the stuff. And then they could do the explanation that you're asking for. But as it stands, we don't have anyone to do that.
Yeah, and then it can erupt into a big Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man kind of stuff monster.
Perfecto. Yes.
There we are. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
I'm getting really good.
I'm doing a Cochrane clap.
Yeah, the knowing clap.
Yeah.
So now
pissed
then.
Pissed and she still managed.
That's true. That's quite true. Right, so I think I would like Chris Tilly to go first.
Okay, I haven't got one yet. Okay, so I'm going to come with it on the spot. Because I actually like these films in different ways equally. But I think I'm going to have to go with what I've just said. That lack of a villain in the stuff makes me want to watch it less than I want to watch Halloween, because I get excited when Cochrane shows up. So I really love the stuff, but I think I can see myself not watching ever again.
You said to me at Vicky's wedding, these are going to be movies, Alex, you're just going to watch again and again and
maybe,
again.
Maybe I will. But for Halloween, I definitely will.
Yeah.
Halloween's got a Halloween's got an anniversary. It's got a date,
right? Yeah.
To watch it on. The stuff needs a date. So because there's no stuff date every year, I'm going for Halloween 3, Seas of the Witch.
There's a National Ice Cream Day that you could, or Yogurt Day.
It's not ice cream.
All right, I'm going for the stuff.
what are you picking?
Halloween 3.
Right.
Okay. You can go next.
So I agree with New World Pictures, the financiers and distributors of the stuff. I think the horror, every horror moment in that movie, I love. The motel scene, even though the logic breaks down, chocolate chip Charlie's death, the kid in the tank, the stuff that's meant to be scary, I think is great. And it's where the comedy comes in, that it slightly tests my resolve. I just didn't enjoy it as much as I thought I was going to. Whereas Halloween 3, I mean, yeah, it's not perfect, but killing little Buddy. Oh, my God, that was amazing. That nihilistic end. Oh, it was near perfect. Should have ended with a chorus of children screaming, but it's a minor point. So, easy one for me this week. It is, without a doubt, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, in my opinion.
Okay. So, I thought this was easy, but then your love of the stuff kind of almost changed my mind, but actually, ultimately, it didn't. I think it's really enjoyable, and it's
admirable. If I'd vote for the stuff, would you vote for the stuff?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, no.
I just think as well, I do have a very, like, a primal urge for, like, a story and a thing and something that looks like a film. And Halloween 3 is, like, the straight version of the stuff. And does that make it better or worse? Like, the stuff is it feels guerrilla style. Some of the scenes, the scene with Danny Aiello and Michael Moriarty feels like a fucking rehearsal. Like, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you've got to admire that kind of filmmaking. But ultimately, Halloween 3 is just more polished. So, yeah, that one.
Right then. We have a winner, and that winner unanimously, which is surprising, is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. But as always, don't forget, you can have your say and tell us how right or wrong you think we got it when the listener poll goes up on our Twitter at ClashPod very soon. Let's look ahead to our final Shocktober of 2023 and the clue Chris gave on Monday.
I gave the clue Duel of the Fates because the films we will be doing are Final Destination and Drag Me to Hell.
Final Destination and Drag Me to Hell. That is our final Shocktober pairing this year. They're available in all sorts of places. Oh, I'm going to miss Shocktober. I do love Shocktober, but what a pair to go out on.
Yeah, and I don't think that'll stop us doing horror films.
Oh, my God, it won't.
No.
Right, it won't. It just won't be called Shocktober. right then. So, in the meantime, do subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, at ClashPod. We'll be back on Monday with part one of our final Shocktober as we talk Final Destination. Have a lovely weekend. Bye-bye.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.